Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us on Sports360AZ.com. We are Arizona-centric. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Good to be with them. Also, we partner with White Mountain Radio. Good to be part of White Mountain Radio. Bob Funk and company, good people there. And on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. On the show today, Mike Sando with ESPN, their NFL insider. Mike Sando, one of the best in the business. I want to talk to him about Colin Kaepernick's new contract, what it means, what's real. Everybody in outrage of $126 million. That is not the true number. Hey, I'm going to have you sign a piece of paper that says we could pay you $126 million. However, there's also language that says we could pay you $60 million. We could pay you $20 million. Of course, all of you would say, I'll take it. But what is the true real number of the Colin Kaepernick contract? And what does it mean for a guy like Russell Wilson? What does it mean for a guy like Cam Newton or Andy Dalton? The Russell Wilson contract, I think, will exceed what Colin Kaepernick made with San Francisco yesterday. And just, you know, in the NFC West as well, we'll talk with Mike Sando about that, all things NFL with Mike Sando here in about 15 minutes. Phil Steele is going to be with us today. I like Phil Steele a lot. He's got a terrific magazine that he's put out for years and years and years. It's like the Bible of college football. National college football writer, longtime publisher, Phil Steele's College Football Preview. So we're going to talk ASU, U of A, and also I want the national title view. With this new playoff of these four teams, is Florida State the only sure bet? And are the other three slots like wide, wide open? Phil Steele, and those of you in the college world know Phil Steele. It's a great guest to get. I'm very excited to talk with him today. Eric is here, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything, Eric Sorensen. Should we tell him the story you worked on last night, or do you want to wait?
We'll hold off on it because it's still a work in progress, as they say. It's not complete.
It's a former athlete trying to find his place here in the Valley, and he's been here a while.
A former pro athlete.
Former pro.
Who had really good success in college and,
he was okay
decent,
in the pros.
Decent pro career, but he did make a lot of money like most pro athletes.
So you were out there like till what? A midnight last night?
About 11. I was out in Scottsdale until about 11:15.
Yeah. And you weren't at the clubs with this guy?
No.
Oh, all right.
It's so, one of those cliffhangers teasers, but I should have the story done by tomorrow on sports360az.com or at the latest on Saturday.
So. I like that. And it's a name that when you guys see this story, you'll say, he's doing what now?
Or I remember him.
Yeah.
My lasting image of fill in the blank was when fill in the blank happened.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
Should be good.
It's fine. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the White Mountains, just outside of Pine Top, where the Coldwater Classic is going on right now through the end of August. Last August, Honda Resort and Casino held the first annual Biggest Baddest Brown competition. They had such great response. Not only are they going to host that again, but they have a new first annual White Mountain Coldwater Classic competition going on right now. This contest opened to all ages, except fish that are only 18 inches long or longer. Weekly super prizes, including cash prizes. If you've not been up to the White Mountains, you have completely, totally missed out here in Arizona. So you need to head up and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino. Get your gear. Come see them at the Honda Outdoor Sports for the best fishing supplies. It's right next to the casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top. Tonight is the NBA Finals game number one. And all the world is just ablaze in a Twitter, I guess. I'm not. I'm excited that we have a finals. I think it's pretty cool that we're going to have LeBron against Tim Duncan and all that stuff and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. However, the fine people at ESPN decided to do a very big, massive research project on the popularity of LeBron James. And it came out this morning, and it came out that people don't like LeBron James still, that the popularity of LeBron still is not where it should be because of the decision back in 2010. We all remember that train wreck, and I don't think I ran across anybody who was a fan of it. Now, whenever we have our good friend Eddie Johnson on the air and we talk about LeBron James, he immediately goes to the mat in very vociferous terms that LeBron is misunderstood, not appreciated, and we don't think about charity, we don't think about this, we don't think about that. I don't agree with Eddie on that. It's fine. When I saw the decision, I thought it was one of the biggest farces and jokes I've ever seen. And yeah, I still look at LeBron a little bit in a way of, you had some really bad people, not bad personally, some really bad advice to go do something like that. Well, you're helping out the Boys and Girls Club. You sat there with the Boys and Girls Club banner right behind you on the day you're announcing where you're going, and you had product placement, and you sold it out, and you paid off the guy to interview you, and it was just the worst of the worst of the worst. And so as great as he is on the basketball court, I don't hate him. I'm not. This isn't hate about tonight. I'm just not that interested in him. There, you know, Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant interest me a lot more than LeBron James. I don't even need to apologize for it. It's just that's how I'm wired. The backlash is there. This research showed that there is less audience interested in LeBron now than there was the previous times that he went to the finals, meaning rather than being all keyed up to see if he can win another one, it's going the opposite direction. I, again, am one of those. The other night, or the other day, I said on this show, and I wrote it Sunday night on Twitter, and some people banged all over me. More interested in the NHL Finals this year than the NBA Finals. Last night's NHL Finals were beyond terrific. Tonight, I'm going to see probably 90 to 87. I'm going to have, I really hope it's not Mike Breen doing the games tonight. I mean, if there's ever somebody that's been given a megaphone who just says, I am paid by the NBA and I'm going to make this sound like it's the greatest thing ever, which is the role of an announcer, I get it. But just don't tell me how great it is, or if it's Tirico too. Both of them are just annoying. You know, Marv Albert, I'll take Marv Albert any day of the week. Now, last night, Kenny Albert was doing the game and there were people beating up on him. And they just had to change the announcers at the last minute. So, you know, you want your lead announcer there. There's a reason why in the last 5 days leading up to tonight's NBA title game, we've seen stupid stories along the lines of war and battle and hate. Tim Duncan hates LeBron James. It's the only way you can stir up interest when you've paid so much in money and rights fees. And so the public's going to hear all this crap rather than, what type of basketball are we going to see on the floor? No, we have LeBron. We have Tim Duncan guaranteed. So we're going to run to LeBron, and then we're going to blow that stuff up because, gosh almighty, we think we're going to get crushed in the ratings on this tonight. And it's very unfortunate, and I'm ripping on my own industry, but and not entirely my own industry. I'm, you know, on the digital side, we can actually say as is. We're not beholden to somebody saying, you got to sell this, you got to sell this, you got to sell this. Yeah, it's the NBA Finals, and I'm excited about it. Here's LeBron James on not bothered by his critics after this research came out today.
I don't really care what people say about me or how people categorize my so-called legacy or what they think I should be. I play this game at a high level. I put myself in a position to help our team succeed. I play for my teammates, play for our team, the city of Miami, my friends and my family.
Mike Sando in about 5 minutes. That soundbite from LeBron didn't sound well. Here we go. Let me hear that again from the very top, and we'll just kind of play it out.
I don't really care what people say about me.
Stop. Okay, so when you come out and say that, you may think that, and I'm not saying you have to be PR correct, but once again, you already are battling a bit of we don't care much for you.
And his tone is so... yeah. Irritated. The tone of his voice is just like talking down to everyone out
there. Sure.
Which is, you know, it happens a lot in pro sports. We get
it.
Well,
it happens,
you know,
a lot everywhere. I have people that say I'm like that sometimes on this show.
Just to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're a...
it's to be expected.
Anyways. No, go ahead and continue with that.
Or how people categorize my so-called legacy or what they think I should be.
Okay. So... yeah, there's going to be people telling you what to do. I would just get to a point of I'd prefer to focus on the game tomorrow night. I don't want all athletes to become vanilla and standardized. But I think in LeBron's case, you already have people that are against you. This research project is so in-depth. And it's a societal thing, too. It has a lot of hate coming from white people. Now, I don't sit here and look at color of skin myself. I was never raised that way. I grew up in sports. I've never seen color. When I see research that has to have race brought into it, it almost strikes me as, let's make sure we get that narrative out there because race sells. And people want to talk about race as they see LeBron James. I'm merely bringing it up because that's one of the headlining parts of this research. LeBron actually scores well, believe it or not, with Hispanics and other ethnicities within this research. Why you would go down that research path that far, I guess you have a research department and you need to come up with something.
And it's all timing too, Brad. I mean, sure. Of course, this is going to be put out there for the world to see the day before the NBA Finals. They're trying to create, it doesn't matter if it's good conflict, bad conflict, they just want buzz. That is the whole thing now. We need to capture the moment. We need to take the biggest star in the NBA and figure out a way to put him on a platform, love him or hate him. And that's exactly what happened.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm leading with it because I do think there is some of that on my end. I don't hate him. I just don't find him. He's not polarizing to me. Jordan was polarizing.
Because
Magic was polarizing.
But this is like Caddyshack 2 and Caddyshack 3. Yeah. We've already seen him win a title, and it was great the first time it happened. Now it's just like, oh, LeBron's going to win another title.
Kobe,
I hate him.
Kobe. But even when Kobe was winning in L.A., okay, what made Kobe in L.A. even more interesting is when they brought Shaq in, and then there was this conflict with Shaq. You know, I can go back. I've been very blessed and fortunate that I've seen Magic come in, I've seen Jordan come in, I've seen Kobe come in, and I've seen LeBron come in. And I've seen all of them. I saw the end of Dr. J, and he was still very relevant. LeBron, to me, is just different than all these other guys. But we're in a day and age where all the stuff off the court is what tries to drive the guy. Magic Johnson, it was just so much fun to watch him play because he did things you'd never seen before on the basketball court for a guy his size. I've seen guys do what LeBron can do. I've seen physical players go to the hole and make plays. I've seen him make big shots. I haven't seen them do it with the regularity that LeBron does. That's why he's a superstar. But it's not like I have to be there tonight to see the starting lineups and to see the game begin. I don't have that sense of urgency about this series. Here's Tim Duncan on people making a big deal out of the pre-series comments that he had on the Heat.
I don't know what I said that was so bad. Everybody keeps saying something about it. I don't know what I said that was so bad. I said I wanted to win the finals. We're back here now and I wanted to win. And if they need to find fuel in that, then so be it.
Yeah. What Tim would like to say is all of you are fools and let's just talk about what's going on the floor.
And he's another one, Brad. You could hear it in the tone. You could just
They're both.
Duncan is such a robot. You get better stuff out of LeBron as media members. He's more engaging. I mean, Tim Duncan, you can just play back the same soundbite from 5 years ago. But again, it's all about building the drama. Just like we saw last Sunday, Duncan said something. He probably could have worded it a little bit better, but all of a sudden now it just explodes like a wildfire.
Eric, tonight the game I think starts at 6. I don't even know.
Yeah,
it could be 5:30
or 6.
Okay.
Starts at 6, so they'll tip it off at about 6:35.
Yeah, right. So you and I both know that we could find our way to sit down at about 8:20 tonight,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be about 4 minutes left in the game.
Yep.
And the game will end at 9 o'clock
mm-hmm.
because there'll be stoppage, foul, free throw, stoppage, timeout, stoppage, foul, advance the ball, stoppage, foul, stoppage, 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 foul. That's the NBA now, okay? And then I'll go back and I'll skim through like the five plays that were really amazing and awesome to watch. I'm bagging on the finals a little bit. Last night I was there from the start, and actually the woman I sleep with every night was there from the start. She actually, not that I'm an ogre or anything, but she had dinner made for me, and we sat there and we didn't move for like 2 hours and 45 minutes. It was terrific. Hey, Nick Johnson's in town today over at the Suns. He's working out at the Suns this morning at 11 o'clock. It's pretty cool. On the other side, we switch gears. Mike Sandow, NFL writer, ESPN.com, National View, Colin Kaepernick's new contract. I'm going to talk to him, too, about Darryl Washington. What about Russell Wilson? How does he feel about this and much more? That's with Mike Sandow. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Brad Sesmat with you. Let's talk a little bit further now about what's gone on with Colin Kaepernick in the last 24 hours. Arizona Cardinal fans down here all buzzing about the contract for Kaepernick. Of course, most of it is overpaid and all of that stuff. Let's see what he does. And then what's Russell Wilson's reaction? To bring us further into this, Mike Sando joins us once again, NFL writer, ESPN, NFL insider with ESPN.com. Of course, Mike in the Pacific Northwest and is plugged in on all things, not just with the NFC, but all around the NFL doing it for ESPN. What is the true number of this deal? I could say $126 million. Oh, my gosh. I could say $61 million guaranteed. Mike, what is the true number of this deal to you?
Oh, probably $27 million over the next couple of years. You know, for the situation that Kaepernick was in was that he was only going to make $1 million this next season. For a quarterback, that's bottom of the barrel, and he had no guarantees with that. So, as we saw last, you know, a couple of years ago, they moved on from Alex Smith after one concussion and kept winning. You know, this team's won over 70% of its starts with Alex Smith, 70% with Kaepernick, and so he didn't have a lot of security. If he were to have had a bad year next year or gotten hurt, he had a $1 million salary. So, the effect for him is now the worst case scenario goes from a bad year and making $1 million and not being in the picture to a bad year and making $13 million in 2014 and not being in their picture. So he gets security, which he didn't have. Probably gives up some of the things in the structure because later in the deal, you know, the team can kind of go year to year. If they wanted to get out of the deal, they could. But if that were to happen, you know, Kaepernick could probably get a job for $10 million somewhere anyway. So
it's not bad work
if you
get it.
Deal for both sides that reflects the fact that Kaepernick is good, but hasn't fully arrived.
Could there have been more guarantees in this deal?
Sure. Yeah, there always could be. I mean, the $61 million guarantee is a partially accurate number because only $13 million is fully guaranteed when he signs the deal. And the rest of the guarantees are, you know, each year the team basically buys a year of guarantees, and they can do that in April. And so, you know, that's, from a player standpoint, you'd rather have that all guaranteed. But guess what? That's not how it works right now. Many of these contracts players sign, you know, are pay as you go. And the you know, the player gets enough cash up front to make it worth his while. The team still retains flexibility. We've seen that throughout the league with players, you know, like the Aqib Talib contract in Denver was like that. But for quarterbacks, sometimes you have to go further than that. In this case, because Kaepernick still had a year left with only $1 million salary, the team had some leverage and used it.
I'm curious, Mike Sando with us, ESPN, NFL insider, ESPN.com, NFL writer. I'm curious, Mike, on the reaction or the feel within the Russell Wilson camp on this.
I don't think there's a big reaction to it. You know, I don't think this is one that raises or lowers the bar. He's going to be in a probably a different category because he will have started more games for the team than Kaepernick has. I think he's more of the face of the Seahawks franchise than Kaepernick is of the 49ers franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And he's won a Super Bowl. So Seattle's probably going to have to come to Wilson with a deal that is less pay-as-you-go and has a little bit more guaranteed money.
And then there's a quarterback like Cam Newton who's sitting out there. What do you think Cam Newton's reaction to this? Because he had a different set of rules under which he came into the league.
Yeah, he came in the same draft, 2011, but as the first overall pick, the team had an additional option year for him. So he's basically under contract not only for this coming season, but for the year after that, on terms that the team can definitely live with for a starting quarterback. So, you know, yes, they could get a deal done and work on something, but I don't think there's nearly the incentive to do so.
And then there's I believe it's seven that I had read yesterday, seven quarterbacks in the next year whose deals are up or could be reworked, guys like Luck and Andy Dalton, among others. Anything around the league that this contract will cause a seismic shift or hurt feeling or something that we don't see today?
Yeah. Well, I wonder how it affects Andy Dalton. I think Andy Dalton was, like Kaepernick, a second-round pick in the same draft class. And has done some good things. But hasn't done them consistently. I think Kaepernick's been a more consistent player than Dalton has been, and is probably a more valued player. But is there, you know, the Bengals are not going to do a Jay Cutler $18 million a year deal with him at this point. So might they be able to follow the Kaepernick sort of blueprint with more of a year-by-year pay-as-you-go deal? That could make sense for both sides and give both sides, you know, some security in the short term and options in the long term. That's one to watch.
One last question before I let you go, and that is your view of down here with the Darrell Washington suspension and the loss of Dansby, a lot of gloom and doom in the last week, saying the Cardinals, who looked very good a few months ago coming into the coming season, now have taken a step or two back. What's your view?
Yeah, well, the thing to me, the key to their season rests in whether the gains they made on offense over the second half of last year continue under Bruce Arians as he puts more of his stamp on that side of the ball. This has been a team that's really needed too much from its defense. They still have a good defensive front, I think. They used a first-round pick in the secondary. They have Patrick Peterson there. The coverage not totally bare throughout the defense. There are issues at linebacker. But to me, watch that offense. It's kind of going to shift a little bit more towards Bruce Arians and whether Carson Palmer can play closer to how he did in the second half of the season when he was among the better quarterbacks in the league from a production standpoint versus early in the year when he struggled through to the other team too much.
I see, and I think that's a fair statement. You could see more offensive output, thus they could win a game 34-24, so to speak, versus last year.
They're in the
and being in a 2017 type of game last year. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time as always and insight. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mike Sendo there, ESPN. Always good to catch up with Mike, ESPN.com, NFL national writer. I don't know if you saw the Diamondbacks game last night. I made my way over to that. They're actually pretty entertaining last night. They did something interesting that I think you should keep an eye on with them. They've been playing Didi Gregorius down at AAA at second base. And last night they made a change, and Gregorius came in at second and Owings was over at short. They had one botched play that should have been in a double play ball. Gregorius tripped over the bag. But if you're the Diamondbacks and you're Tony La Russa and you're Kevin Towers and you see this mess that you're in, would you consider trading Aaron Hill and giving Gregorius that spot, thus saying, we believe that we're strong up the middle for years to come? It also justifies a Trevor Bauer deal, which at this point looks just miserable. But the Diamondbacks last night, Montero had six RBIs. I haven't seen him swing the bat so well. They had 21 hits. They scored six in the eighth and five in the ninth. They crushed Colorado. Yeah, I bring it up because, yeah, they're so far off the radar screen. But if you take a closer look and you just take a close look but yet step back from all the mess of April, you see that they're playing above 500 here in about the last 4.5, 5 weeks. You see that they have a winning record away from Chase Field. Their Chase Field record has gotten somewhat better. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's all heading in the right direction, it's all trending the right way and all of that. I do think it's interesting. I think they're only three back of the Padres right now. They're like 11 or 12 out of being at 500. It would be quite an accomplishment if they were able to turn the thing in a direction where they were able to rattle off 7, 8, 9, 10 wins in a row, given that their pitching is short. Like, they brought Trevor Cahill in last night in the ninth inning, and the first thing that was said on the broadcast is, this should be a quick inning. This should just be a quick get in and get. Brenly said it just should be quick. Like,
tick.
I've seen
tick,
enough of this.
Tick.
Right?
Tick. 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 Everyone's favorite, what, $15 million long reliever?
Oh, gosh. It's it is so painful to see him out there. But on the positive side, they blew a lead. They came back. And it was actually a very entertaining ball game last night. I kind of liked what I saw out of them. On the other side, speaking of entertaining, so Phil Steele. Now, I've heard Phil interviewed a couple of times through the years, and we've not been able to track him down. Now we have. He's the editor and publisher of Phil Steele's College Football Preview. This is one of those guys that lives in a basement and does nothing but watch film, write, talk to people, put a magazine together, and push it out there. And it's now out on iTunes. And very much looking forward to talking to him about this new lay of the land in college football. Can we already just put Florida State in the Final Four? Where are Arizona State and Arizona football viewed from his perspective? The Pac-12 and much more. That's with Phil Steele. Next, I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Brad Sussmat on Sports360AZ, partnered with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, on White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona, and of course on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Phil Steele joins us now for a couple of minutes. We're going to talk some college football. You can go to philsteele.com, and Steele is S-T-E-E-L-E, philsteele.com. No one more comprehensive. The Phil Steele College Football Preview is out on iTunes. You can pre-order his magazine online. He's the editor-publisher of Phil Steele College Football, and he joins us for a couple of minutes. How are you, Phil?
Hey, real good, Brad. How about yourself this, I guess this morning for you?
Yeah, no, we're good out here. I don't know about our college football out here within the state this coming season. I think I feel pretty good about the direction of both programs with Rich Rod and Todd Graham. I feel like the Fiesta Bowl is kind of in play with this new format, and I'd like to start there. The new format, is, in your view, is it just Florida State you could pencil in right now of the Final Four? Or do you put Alabama and Oregon in there? What's your view nationally as we get into this new era of playoff?
That's a great question, Brad. And I think if you are going to put one team in Penn to be in that Final Four this year, I'm going to go with the Florida State Seminoles. When you look at Florida State, they're a team that not only rank in my top units in all eight position categories in the front of the magazine. I'm talking quarterback, running back, receivers, offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, defensive back, and special teams. But their weakest unit of the eight units is my number 12 rated set of running backs in the country. That means every other unit's rated above 12. Really, they're the most complete team out there. And schedule-wise, they only take on the number 46 rated schedule in the country. Oklahoma State's in a little bit of a rebuilding year. Louisville loses Bridgewater and only has four starters back on defense. I think Florida State's going to be a double-digit favorite in every single one of their games. Now, when you look at Alabama, they're a complete team as well, but they've got some tests where you wonder a little bit about. They have to play Mississippi on the road and LSU on the road. They also have to play, of course, Auburn in the Iron Bowl. When you go out west, Oregon has to play UCLA, and those two teams are really the elite teams in the Pac-12, but don't discount USC or Stanford, and naturally in the Pac-12, everybody plays everybody. So I think everybody's got some flaws and or a tough schedule. Florida State's the one team I'm writing down in pen for being in the Final Four.
If you put Alabama up against it from a quarterback rating standpoint with McCarron now gone, where do you rank them with quarterback play?
You know, I still rate them number 45 in the country, and despite having inexperience, a lot of folks were hitting me up with saying, well, how can you rate Alabama number two in the country when they don't have an experienced quarterback? And I say, did you watch a national championship game last year? Neither of those teams had an experienced quarterback. Have you looked at who's been winning national titles? Three of the last four national titles, no experience at the quarterback position. And really, if there's one team that doesn't need a lot of experience at quarterback, it's Alabama, because Alabama's quarterback doesn't have to throw for 4,500 yards for them to be successful. They have to hand the ball off to those great running backs working behind that offensive line and not make mistakes throwing the ball downfield. And Jacob Coker is more than capable. He is 6'5", 235 pounds, got a spattering of experience with Florida State last year. And in fact, it was a legitimate battle between he and Jameis Winston for the starting job. I thought it was a smokescreen when they were talking about it in August. But he did legitimately challenge Winston, and I think he's got a tremendous supporting cast with him here. So I think Jacob Coker will be just fine in his first year as a starter, and he's not some fuzzy-faced freshman either. He is a redshirt junior.
Talking college football, this is the place to be. Editor, publisher, Phil Steele, College Football Preview. You can get it on iTunes right now. You can order the magazine, philsteele.com, as it comes out. And all sorts of content, great content, a lot of different directions to go off that. Let me throw a couple teams at you off the board before we get into what's going on here with Arizona and Arizona State. So from a national perspective, a team that I saw last year and saw the growth of them, give me a view of Oklahoma for Big 12 fans out here.
Well, Oklahoma to me is an interesting team this year, because I think if they played in that Sugar Bowl against Alabama and lost that game by the two touchdowns everybody thought they would lose, despite the fact they'd have the same personnel returning that they do this year as they would have in that scenario, I think Oklahoma would come into the season ranked 17, 18, 19 in the polls coming into the year. But because Trevor Knight really emerged in that bowl game, had a fantastic game hit against Alabama in the championship game, thrown for 348 yards, 32 of 44 passing. Oklahoma won that game solidly. Now Oklahoma, when you look at their talent, you look at their schedule, they're probably going to be top five in the AP poll at the start of the year. And frankly, I can't argue with it that much. You look at their defense, they are loaded. They've got my number 17 rated defensive line, number 9 set of linebackers, number 12 DBs, overall a top 10 defense. And offensively, as long as Landry Jones looks close to as good as he did against Alabama, they'll be just fine. They've got my number 6 rated offensive line. Special teams is solid. And when you look at their schedule, their road games are against Tulsa, West Virginia, TCU, Iowa State, and Texas Tech. Now, of their 5 true road games this year, only one of those teams even had a winning record last year. I think Oklahoma's got the talent schedule to run the table, but the big question is, can they? And if you're looking for a team that has the potential to be a little overrated, it might be the Sooners based on what I started the conversation with.
Ohio State thumbnail sketch.
Ohio State question marks. Offensive line, quarterback Braxton Miller. How are they going to do this year? 2 years ago, they had a very young offensive line, actually improved their rushing yards per game, allowed less sacks, and they're working against the best defensive line in college football every day in practice. I think the O-line will do just fine. They've got to beat Michigan State at East Lansing, get past that game. But I think Ohio State has an excellent shot at running the table this year. As long as Braxton Miller stays healthy, they don't have Kenny Guyton to come off the bench, and I wasn't that impressed with the backup quarterbacks in the spring.
Talking college football with Phil Steele, if you were to talk more about the quarterback depth nationally this year, I've seen Brett Hundley out here since his high school days in Chandler, Arizona. He goes over to UCLA. Mariota out here on the West Coast. I think Kevin Hogan is a comer. He's not there yet up at Stanford. Of course, the national names, it all starts and ends with Jameis Winston. What's your view of the quarterbacks this year, Phil, this coming season?
I like it a lot. In fact, I was doing a draft show special back when the draft was for the NFL, and I made the statement that with Bortles, Manziel, and Bridgewater out there, that I think Mariota after this year, Winston after this year, Bryce Petty after this year, and even Brett Hundley after this year, would all be drafted higher than any of those three quarterbacks. That this year's quarterback class far superior to last year's quarterback class. And so I'm pretty bullish on the 2014 quarterbacks, and that's good for college football.
Let's go in-state then. Todd Graham at Arizona State coming into a season where I think he's got a first-round pick, maybe even a high first-round pick at wide receiver in Jalen Strong. What's your view of the Sun Devils this season?
Interesting. I remember Coach Graham's first year, and I was talking to him after all the magazines had come out, and he was loving the fact that they were picked pretty low in the conference, and they ended up doing well, going 5-4. They had 8 returning starters, much like they have this year, which made them an inexperienced team, and they did well in his first season. And you know, Taylor Kelly coming back is a big plus. They do lose Marion Grice, and Grice, of course, was the game breaker, the home run threat at running back. I like what I saw to Foster and DeAndre Lewis in the spring. As you touched on, Jalen Sprong, one of the best wide receivers in the country. And they bring in Eric Lauderdale, who's my number 15 rated JUCO. I think he could have an impact. The offensive line's got 3 starters back, so they'll be pretty potent on offense. My biggest question mark with Arizona State is, wow, look at everybody that they lost. A Will Sutton, Carl Bradford. In fact, 10 of the top 12 tacklers are gone, and a lot of them the big names. Now, the one thing Coach Graham has done extremely well is bring in JUCOs and have them play well in their first year. A lot of head coaches in the country have trouble with that. I think the best at it is Bill Snyder at Kansas State, bringing in JUCOs and having them be highly productive their first year. And I think Coach Graham is right up there with them. He's got to hope that his defense, which has brought in a lot of JUCOs, is able to get experience level right off the bat. When you look at the schedule for Arizona State, it's not easy. UCLA at home, that's a loaded and experienced UCLA team, and they only play in week 4. They won't have played a team anywhere near UCLA. Weber State, New Mexico, Colorado, it's going to be a big step up in level of competition for a lot of those JUCOs. I'm interested to see how that plays out. At USC, at Washington, at Oregon State, those are all games that could very well be an underdog. And then, of course, the Territorial Cup against Arizona is on the road on a Friday. So I think with five Pac-12 road games, it's going to be tough for Arizona State to get back to the double-digit win total. They'll have a successful season this year, but I do think it'll be a slight drop-off from last year due to the experience level on the defense.
You know, and the one thing, too, about their schedule is the Notre Dame game is out here, and it's one of those that it's late in the season, which I think is to their advantage, Phil, and here's why. If you're able to overcome some of those landmines and you can be on the national radar late in the year, you're not going to get more press than when the week you play Notre Dame. So I think everything you're saying about the defense are huge question marks, to be sure. But I do think that there is a scenario for them to have some success nationally. I'm not going to talk about them in the Final Four or anything like that. But I think that there is that caveat there with Notre Dame late in the year. Down in Tucson, what do you make out of Rich Rods this season?
I'm pretty bullish on Arizona. And when you look at the Wildcats, a little bit of an inconsistent team. You look at that team that went into Washington earlier in the year, got beat by 18 points. I look at the team that got whipped by Arizona State. Of course, that was the week after they had just beat Oregon, which was huge because Oregon was a massive game. But, you know, you look at that Oregon game, that was taking out one of the best teams in the country, and they didn't just beat Oregon. They demolished Oregon in that game, 42-16, and had a big halftime lead. Now, the biggest question mark at Arizona, of course, who's going to be quarterback? They got so much to choose from there. And really, I watched the spring game, and I was thinking, okay, maybe I can find who's going to be the starting quarterback by watching the spring game. But I like what Jesse Scroggins did. I like what Randall did. I like what Solomon did and Brewer did. And so they're extremely deep at the quarterback spot. They're going to need to narrow it down, get one guy taking the majority of snaps, get him ready for the season. I went with Scroggins as a projected starter for myself. The receiving core, though, wow. Nate Phillips is back, leading receiver from last year. In fact, three of the top four receivers return. The biggest loss last year was losing Austin Hill in the preseason. Well, Austin Hill is back, and I think he's one of the premier wide receivers in the country. And they add in my number five-rated wide receiver when he came out of high school in Caleb Jones, who's a transfer from Texas. They add in Devontae Neal, my number nine-rated wide receiver out of high school. He's a transfer from Notre Dame. They have one of the best wide receiving cores in the country. I read at number four. And how about that offensive line? Last year they put up some outstanding numbers, 265 yards per game rushing, 5.3 yards per carry, allowed just 17 sacks. They've got practically the whole unit back. They only lose one starter this year. They're in the third year of Rich Rod's schemes. I have them the number 11 rated offensive line in the country. Now, defensively, there's some question marks up front on the defensive front seven, but the secondary looks solid, and they have a little bit better of a schedule than does Arizona State. They get Arizona State at home, which is always a plus. They get Washington at home. They get USC at home. Their road games are against Oregon. Washington State's a winnable road game. At UCLA, Utah is a winnable road game. So less landmines on the road schedule for Arizona. I actually think they can take a step up in the Pac-12 this year. I got them finishing third in the South.
Good stuff there. Before I let you go, last question. If you look at the Pac-12 South, SC, UCLA, ASU is a dark horse. How do you see that shaping up?
I went with UCLA as the team to beat there. And, you know, they do have to play Arizona State on the road. But like I said, it's early in the year. They're taking on an inexperienced team. And I think that's the time to get them if they're going to get Arizona State. They've got 17 returning starters. They really are a complete team at the positions across the board. I love the job Moore is doing. And they rank in my top units in all eight position categories. They get the big game against USC at home. Last year, they played Stanford and Oregon, both on the road in back-to-back weeks, which was two of their Pac-12 losses. But both weeks, they were down to three freshman offensive linemen without their top running back. The offensive line's in much better shape. The running backs are in better shape. They still have Brett Hundley. I think UCLA is a legitimate national title contender.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight. Let's do it again, Phil.
Sounds great, Brad. Always a lot of fun talking football.
Good deal. There's Phil Steele. You can check his content out. Editor, publisher, Phil Steele, College Football Preview. It's on iTunes right now. You can download it off that. Appreciate his time. So I've got some things I want to get into on the other side. That there was a story of Jurgen Klinsmann, the USA soccer coach, talking about babying of athletes and talked about Kobe Bryant. All in the same sentence. And there's some news today on Kevin Love. Of course, I've been following the Kevin Love watch here with the Suns. I've got that on the other side as well. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. Plenty of content today up on Sports360 AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZCentralSports.com, and, of course, White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona and at Brad Sussmat. So while I was doing the Phil Steele interview just now, I checked my inbox towards the end of the interview. I do that on occasion. I can multitask. Multitasking, they say, is not healthy for you, but that's just kind of what we do here. The show unfolds. We see subjects that come up along as we're doing this every day. It's not like we have to a two-hour meeting before the show, and then we do another 2 hours after the show and break it down. No, we're big boys here. We know how to get it done. When I see that U of A schedules Mississippi State for a home-and-home in football.
Let's see. I wonder how that one got done. Let's see. Craig Byrne is a U of A at AD. His dad is the AD at Mississippi State. Well, oh, I see. I got it.
They recruit Starkville, right?
Do they? I don't know.
I don't know.
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
Texas, California, Arizona.
Starkville, right, from Mississippi State?
Correct.
Yeah. You know, and Phil was talking about U of A's preseason schedule. No, it's not good, but it's interesting.
Non-conference schedule. No such thing as preseason.
Yeah, I mean, well,
I fine. Gotcha. I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
Technicalities.
No, I'm glad you correct me on it. So
it might as well be a preseason.
Well, yeah, when you're playing Weber State. So Jurgen Klinsmann, I'm going to talk about Jurgen Klinsmann here for a minute and Kobe Bryant in the same sentence. I found this to be really interesting. Some of you sent this to me yesterday. By the way, if you're one of those that is into this, and you want to be part of the crew here, there are a couple of guys that have just figured it out that through the years or months or weeks that they just send me stuff. And you're more than welcome to be part of this. I mean, you could be sitting at your desk job saying, God, I hate doing what I'm doing right now. Well, then shoot me a note on something that you see or that you like or you don't like. I'm fine with that. Or if you want to be the guy that just rips me to shreds, there's those guys too. I'll block you eventually. I just get tired of it. I don't need it. But it's Brad at Sports360AZ. So Jurgen Klinsmann criticized what he sees as an American custom of sports teams catering to star players. What do you know? You mean American coaches cater to star players? So Klinsmann, who of course didn't bring Landon Donovan along and has been ripped from head to toe, and we have talked about how Klinsmann didn't want to play games. Well, the German native told the New York Times Magazine that he could not understand why the Lakers would give Kobe Bryant a two-year contract extension for $48.5 million. Jurgen Klinsmann, like a lot of us. He said, quote, this always happens in America. Kobe Bryant, for example, continuing quoting from Jurgen Klinsmann, Kobe Bryant, for example, why does he get a two-year contract extension for $50 million because of what he is going to do in the next 2 years for the Lakers? Of course not. Of course not. He gets it because of what he's done before. It makes no sense, Klinsmann says. Why do you pay for what has already happened? End quote. And he's right about that. 5 months later, Klinsmann had to decide whether to bring Landon Donovan along, 32 years of age, fourth World Cup. Donovan has played well for Galaxy. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but since Donovan was cut, he's crushed it for Galaxy. Klinsmann did not immediately invite him back to compete in the World Cup qualifier for the U.S. The time off, part of the deal that Donovan's omission from the World Cup, the Times Magazine reported, as Klinsmann was put off by what he saw, is Donovan's inconsistent motivation. He came back, he's playing in the MLS, and people say, oh, he's playing well, but what does that really mean, Klinsmann said. This is where MLS hurts him. He was playing at 70-80%, and he was still dominant. That doesn't help anyone. I watched the games. What was I supposed to say? That he was good? He was not good. Not then, no way, so he had to wait. So let's go back on this stuff at the top here, that this always happens in America. Do you want to tell Jurgen Klinsmann to get on a plane and get the heck out of Dodge? I do not. Now, in the case of Kobe Bryant, his two-year extension for $50 million, because of what he's going to do in the next 2 years for the Lakers, of course not. He gets it because of what he's already done. We do see that in sports where this is a thank you contract and a rewarding contract. I don't think we see it across the fruited plain of American sports. You know, we see guys that are in contracts that are bad that we can't get out of. I'll give you an example. Was Steve Nash, towards the end of his run with the Suns, worth the amount of money that the Suns were paying him? And the answer to that is, of course he was not. He couldn't move defensively. He couldn't do the things that he was once able to do. However, and this is where I think Klinsmann is off base, without Steve Nash, nobody would show up to watch the Suns play. It's a tough dilemma for the owner to be in, and the owner was telling people, I need the lower bowl filled. If I don't have the lower bowl filled, then how are we going to make money? And so he was more agreeable to lose games on the floor, but because he had a guy that people would tune in to watch or buy jerseys of, he was willing to accept him, even though he was, in my opinion, a shell of his former self. Am I surprised at all that Steve Nash has gone over to the Lakers and has done nothing? I'm not surprised at all. And I like Steve, but anybody who, and I don't know anybody who doesn't like Steve, but if you're thinking along the Klinsmann way, it's a guy like Kobe Bryant should be paid a couple million dollars. That's not the case here in American sports because Kobe was able to sell jerseys, sell shoes, do all sorts of things. Klinsmann's just talking about on the field. Do I think that the USA World Cup team is going to have great success this month? No, I don't. But I do agree with some of that thinking that you can't just walk in and say, I am who I am, thus you should take me because of what I've done previously. You always have to be hungry. It doesn't matter if it's me coming in here and doing this every day or building this business from ground zero. I got to be hungry every day. And I have to have people around me every day that are hungry too. And in the same thing in your business, if you're just mailing it in and saying, well, this is what I've already done, then you don't have the competitive juices in you. I kind of like what Klinsmann said. I think using Kobe as example is probably the wrong way to go in one regard, because on the court, yeah, he's not near the player, but he still drives revenue. Am I making sense on this, E?
Yeah, you are, and I agree with you. I mean, they say, oh, there's no loyalty in sports. Well, yeah, there kind of is when you look below the surface level, and you mentioned Steve Nash, and that was the first one that came to my mind, too. Both parties wanted to play nice. Both parties wanted the movie to end well, and that both to, you know, right off into the sunset
Luis Gonzalez,
together.
When Gonzo was at the end with the Diamondbacks,
yeah,
he was not the same player.
No.
However, the equity that he'd built up and the goodwill that he built up and the attraction of people tuning in to watch, all the ancillary things that fans don't see.
Even with Randy Johnson. We had the conversation out at the Waste Management Open with Derek Hall, you know, yeah. And Derek was talking about when Randy left, yeah, it wasn't good and there was bad blood between the big unit in the organization, and part of what D. Hall did was try to bring him back and make him feel appreciated, and they honored him this year, and now it sounds like everything's okay.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. I still think Randy's a wild card.
He's wound a little different than all of us, and that's fine.
It's fine. So that story's out there, and it caught my eye. I got something Kevin Love, too. And I'll save it for the next segment, but on Kevin Love and the Suns. This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Santan Ford, you know, you are looking for that vehicle. It's coming up now to summer and the kids are out of school. My kids are out of school. We're looking at taking our family vacation here in a couple of weeks. I'm sure you're looking around as well. What vehicle are you going to be driving? Do you have the right truck, guys? You're going to go up to the mountains. You're going to go camping. And you're still in your minivan. Okay, and those stages are done. Your kids are past that. Is it time to get out of that minivan and get into something along the lines of a Ford F-150? Santan Ford, great wide variety, wide selection. Cars, trucks, whatever it may be, with General Manager Tim Hovick and company, the right way to go, that's Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, great lineup of people, part of that team, not just myself, Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald, Patrick Peterson, Jay Feely. I'll drive those vehicles at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, partnering with the Arizona Republic. White Mountain Radio, good to partner with good people up on the mountain. And, of course, on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. There's plenty of content on Sports360AZ.com today to check out. We've got a great story on a one-legged volleyball player who's getting it done. A pitching story on Tommy John surgeries here in the Valley and a guy who's got a rehab program that tries to work through it. You have to check it out. It's over on Sports 360. Plenty of high school content, recruiting news, and notes as well. I'm Brad Sussmath.